long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars: Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. Read for you by Mark Thompson. For years, the galaxy-wide conflict known as the Clone Wars has raged. The struggle between the rightful government of the Galactic Republic and the Confederacy of Independent Systems has claimed the lives of untold billions. The Force-wielding Jedi, for millennia the guardians of peace in the galaxy, have been thwarted at nearly every turn by the Separatists and their leader, the Sith Lord Count Dooku. With the war showing no signs of ending, and the casualties mounting each day, the Jedi must consider every possible means of defeating their cunning foe. Whether some means are too unthinkable, and some allies too untrustworthy, has yet to be revealed. Chapter 1. Ashu Naimal, firstborn of Ashu, child of the planet Morani, huddled with her family in the hold of a Republic frigate. Naya and the other refugees of Morani braced themselves against the repercussions from the battle raging outside. Sharp, tufted Maran ears caught the sounds of orders, uttered and answered by clones, the same voice issuing from different throats. Keen noses scented faint whiffs of fear from the speakers. The frigate rocked from yet another blast. Some of the pups whimpered, but the adults projected calm. Rakshu cradled Naya's two younger siblings. Their little ears were flat against their skulls, and they shivered in terror against their mother's warm, lithe body. But their blue muzzles were tightly closed. No whimpers for them. A proud line was Ashu. It had given the Moran many fine warriors and wise statesmen. Naya's sister, Tigu, second-born of Ashu, had a gift for soothing any squabble. And Kamu, the youngest, was on his way to becoming a great artist. Or had been, until the Separatists had blasted Morani's capital city to rubble. The Jedi had come, in answer to the distress call, as the Moran knew they would. But they had come too late. Angry at the Morani government's refusal to cooperate, the Separatists had decided that genocide, or as close a facsimile as possible, would solve the problem of obtaining a world so rich in resources. Naya clenched her fists. If only she had a blaster. She was an excellent shot. If any of the enemy attempted to board the ship, she could be of use to the brave clones now risking their lives to protect the refugees. Better yet, Naya wished she could stab one of the Separatist scum with her stinger. Even though it would... Another blast, this one worse. The lights flickered off, replaced almost instantly by the blood-red hue of the backup lighting. The dark gray metal of the freighter's bulkhead seemed to close in ominously. Something snapped inside Naya. Before she really knew what she was doing, she had leapt to her feet and bounded across the hold to the rectangular door.
Naya!
Rakshu's voice was strained.
We were told to stay here!
Naya whirled, her eyes flashing.
I am walking the warrior path, Mother. I can't just sit here doing nothing. I have to try to help.
You will only be in the...
Rakshu's voice trailed off as Naya held her gaze. Tears slipped silently down Rakshu's muzzle, glittering in the crimson light. The Moran were no telepaths, but even so, Naya knew her mother could read her thoughts.
I can do no harm. We are lost already.
Rakshu knew it too. She nodded, then said, her voice swelling with pride in her eldest,
"Stab well."
Naya swallowed hard at the blunt blessing. The stinger was the birthright of the Moran, and if used, their death warrant. The venom that would drop a foe in his tracks would also travel to his slayer's heart. The two enemies always died together. The words were said to one who was not expected to return alive.
"Goodbye, Mama,"
Naya whispered, too softly for her mother to hear. She slammed a palm against the button and the door opened. Without pausing, she raced down the corridor, her path outlined by a strip of emergency lighting. She skidded to a halt when the hallway branched into two separate directions, picked one, and ran headlong into one of the clones.
"Whoa there,"
he said, not unkindly.
"You're not supposed to be here, little one."
"I will not die huddled in fear,"
Naya snapped.
"You're not going to,"
the clone said, attempting to be reassuring.
"We've outrun puddle jumpers like these before. Just get back to the holding area and stay out of our way. We've got this in hand."
Naya smelled the change in his sweat. He was lying. For a moment, she spared compassion for him. What had his life been like when he was a youngling? There had been no one to give him hugs or tell stories. No loving parental hands to soothe childhood's nightmares. Only brothers, identical in every way, who had been raised as clinically as he. Brothers and duty and death. Feeling strangely older than the clone, and grateful for her own unique life that was about to end, Naya smiled, shook her head, and darted past him. He did not give chase. The corridor ended in a door. Naya punched the button. The door slid open onto the cockpit, and she gasped. She had never been in space before, so she was unprepared for the sight the five-section viewport presented. Bright flashes and streaks of laser fire dueled against an incongruously peaceful-looking starfield. Naya wasn't sufficiently knowledgeable to be able to distinguish one ship from another, except for her own planet's vessels, looking old and small and desperate as they tried to flee with their precious cargo of families just like her own. A clone and the Jedi General, the squat reptilian Alina, who had led the mission to rescue Naya's people, occupied the cockpit's two chairs. With no warning, another blast rocked the ship. Naya went sprawling into the back of the clone's chair, causing him to lurch forward. He turned to her, his eyes dark with anger, and snapped,
"Get off this!"
"General Tubor,"
came a smooth voice. Naya's fur lifted. She whirled, snarling silently. Oh, she knew that voice. The Moran had heard it uttering all sorts of pretty lies and promises that were never intended to be kept. She wondered if there was anyone left in the galaxy who didn't recognize the silky tones of Count Dooku. He appeared on a small screen near the top of the main viewport. A satisfied, cruel smirk twisted Dooku's patrician features.
"I'm surprised you contacted me. As I recall, Jedi prefer to be regarded as the strong, silent type."
The clone lifted a finger to his lips, but the warning was unnecessary. Naya's sharp teeth were clenched, her fur bristled, and her entire being was focused on the Count's loathed face. But she knew better than to speak. General Chubor, sitting beside the clone in the pilot's chair, so short that his feet did not reach the floor, likewise was not baited.
"You've got your victory, Dooku."
His slightly nasal, high-pitched voice was heavy with sorrow.
"The planet is yours. Let us have the people. We have entire families aboard, many of whom are injured. Their innocence."
Dooku chuckled, as if Chubor had said something dreadfully amusing over a nice hot cup of tea.
"My dear General Chubor, you should know by now that in a war there is no such thing as an innocent."
"Count, I repeat,
Our passengers are civilian families, General Chubor continued, with a calmness at which Naya could only marvel. Half of the refugees are younglings. Permit them at least to...
Younglings whose parents unwisely chose to ally with the Republic.
Gone was Dooku's civilized purr. His gaze settled on Naya. She didn't flinch from his scrutiny, but she couldn't stifle a soft growl. He looked her up and down, then dismissed her as of no further interest.
I've been monitoring your transmissions, General. And I know that this little chat is being sent to the Jedi Council. So let me make one thing perfectly clear.
Dooku's voice was now hard and flat, as cold and pitiless as the ice of Morani's polar caps.
As long as the Republic resists me, innocents will continue to die. Every death in this war lies firmly at the feet of the Jedi. And now, it is time for you and your passengers to join the ranks of the Fallen.
One of the largest Morani ships bloomed silently into a flower of yellow and red that disintegrated into pieces of rubble. Naya didn't know she had screamed until she realized her throat was raw. Chubor whirled in his chair, his large-eyed gaze locked with hers. The last thing Ashu Nyamoth, firstborn of Ashu, would ever see was the shattered expression of despair in the Jedi's eyes. The bleakest part about being a Jedi, thought Master Obi-Wan Kenobi, is when we fail. He had borne witness to scenes like the one unfolding before the Jedi Council far too many times to count. And yet the pain didn't lessen. He hoped it never would. The terrified final moments of thousands of lives played out before them. Then the grim holographic recording flickered and vanished. For a moment there was a heavy silence. The Jedi cultivated a practice of non-attachment, which had always served them well. Few understood, though, that while specific individual bonds, such as romantic love or family, were forbidden, the Jedi were not ashamed of compassion. All lives were precious, and when so many were lost in such a way, the Jedi felt the pain of it in the Force, as well as in their own hearts. At last, Master Yoda, the diminutive but extraordinarily powerful head of the Jedi Council, sighed deeply.
"Grieved are we all to see so many suffer," he said. "Courage the youngling had at the end. Forgotten, she and her people will not be."
"I hope her bravery brought her comfort," Kenobi said. "The Moran prize it. She and the others are one with the Force now. But I have no more earnest wish than that this tragedy be the last the war demands."
"As do all of us, Master Kenobi," said Master Mace Windu. "But I don't think that wish is coming true anytime soon."
"Did any ships make it out with their passengers?" Anakin Skywalker asked. Kenobi had asked the younger man, still only a Jedi Knight, to accompany him to this gathering, and Anakin stood behind Kenobi's chair.
"Reported in, no one has," Yoda said quietly. "But hope, always, there is."
"With respect, Master Yoda," Anakin said, "the Moran needed more than our hope. They needed our help, and what we were able to give them wasn't enough."
"And unfortunately, they are not the only ones we've been forced to give short shrift," Windu said.
"For almost 3 standard years this war has raged," said Plo Koon,
the Keldor member of the Council. His voice was muffled due to the mask he wore over his mouth and nose, a requirement for his species in this atmosphere.
"We can barely even count the numbers of the Fallen, but this..."
He shook his head.
"All directly because of one man's ambition and evil," said Windu. "It's true that Dooku is the leader of the Separatists," Kenobi said. "And no one will argue that he is both ambitious and evil.
But he hasn't done it alone. I agree that Dooku may be responsible for every death in this war, but he didn't actively commit each one.
Of course not. But it's interesting that you use nearly the same words as Dooku. He placed the blame for the casualties squarely upon us.
A lie, that is,
Yoda said. He waved a small hand dismissively.
Foolish it would be for us to give it a moment's credence.
Would it be truly, Master Yoda?
Windu asked with a hard look on his face. As a senior member of the Council, he was one of the few who dared question Master Yoda. Kenobi raised an eyebrow.
What do you mean, Master Windu?
Asked Yoda.
Have the Jedi really explored every option? Could we have ended this war sooner? Could we, in fact, end it right now?
Something prickled at the back of Kenobi's neck. Speak plainly, he said. Windu glanced at his fellows. He seemed to be weighing his words. Finally, he spoke.
Master Kenobi's right. Dooku couldn't have done this completely alone. Billions follow him. But I also stand by my observation that this war is Dooku's creation. Those who follow him follow him. Every player is controlled by the Count. Every conspiracy has been traced back to him.
Anakin's brow furrowed. You're not saying anything we don't already know, Master. Windu continued.
Without Dooku, the Separatist movement would collapse. There would no longer be a single seemingly invincible figurehead to rally around. Those who were left would consume themselves in a frenzy to take his place. If every river is a branch of a single mighty one, then let us dam the flow. Cut off the head, and the body will fall.
But that's what we've been...
Oh. Anakin's blue eyes widened with sudden comprehension. No, Kenobi thought. Surely Mace isn't suggesting... Yoda's ears unfurled as he sat up straighter.
Assassination, mean you?
No. Kenobi spoke before he realized he was going to, and his voice was strong and certain. Some things simply aren't within the realm of possibility. Not, he added sharply, looking at Mace, for Jedi.
Speaks the truth, Master Kenobi does. To the dark side, such actions lead.
Mace held up his hands in a calming gesture.
No one here wishes to behave like a Sith Lord.
Few do, at first. A small step, the one that determines destiny, often is.
Windu looked from Yoda to Kenobi. Then his brown-eyed gaze lingered on Kenobi.
Answer me this. How often has this council sat shaking our heads, saying everything leads back to Dooku? A few dozen times? A few hundred?
Kenobi didn't reply. Beside him, Anakin shifted his weight. The younger Jedi didn't look at Kenobi or Windu, and his lips were pressed together in a thin, unhappy line.
A definitive blow must be struck, Mace said.
He rose from his chair and closed the distance between himself and Kenobi. Mace had the height advantage, but Kenobi got to his feet calmly and met Windu's gaze.
Dooku is going to keep doing exactly what he has been,
Windu continued quietly.
He's not going to change. And if we don't change either, then the war will keep raging until this tortured galaxy is nothing but space debris and dead worlds. We, the Jedi, and the clones we command are the only ones who can stop it.
Master Windu is right, said Anakin. I think it's about time to open the floor to ideas that before we would have never considered.
Anakin,
Kenobi warned.
With respect, Master Kenobi,
Anakin barreled on.
Morani's fall is terrible, but it's only the most recent crime Dooku has committed against a world and a people.
Mace added,
the Morans who died today already have more than enough company. Do we want to increase those numbers? One man's life must be weighed against those of potentially millions of innocents. Isn't protecting the innocent the very definition of what it means to be a Jedi? We are failing the Republic and its citizens. We must stop this now.
Kenobi turned to Yoda. The ancient Jedi Master peered at all those present, be it physically or holographically. Sacy Tin, an Iktachi Master, the Togruta Shakti, her expression calm but sorrowful. The images of Kit Fisto, Oppo Rancisis, and Depa Balaba. Kenobi was surprised to see sorrow and resignation settle over Yoda's wrinkled green face. The diminutive Jedi closed his huge eyes for a moment, then opened them.
Greatly heavy, my heart is. That come to this, matters have, he said.
Using his cane, he rose and walked to the window. All eyes followed him. Below, Coruscant unfolded, and myriad small, personal vessels sped past, and the sun gazed down at it all as clouds drifted languidly by. Yoda extended a three-fingered hand, indicating the view.
Each life aflame in the Force is beautiful, unique, glowing and precious. It stands to bravely cast its own small light against the darkness that would consume it.
Yoda lifted his cane, pointing at a cloud that was grayer and larger than most of its fellows.
But grows this darkness does. With each minute, the Dooku continues his attacks.
Yoda fell silent. No one interrupted as the cloud continued on its path, moving to hide the face of the sun. Its shadow leached away the vibrancy of the city beneath it, turning its gleam to dullness, its bright colors to a muted, somber palette. It was nothing more than the sun and a shadow, but nonetheless, Kenobi felt his heart lurch within his chest.
Stop him. We must,
Yoda said solemnly. He closed his eyes and bowed his head. The moment hung heavy, and it seemed everyone was loath to break it. Finally, Mace spoke.
The question before us now is, who will strike the killing blow?
Kenobi sighed and rubbed his eyes.
I may have a suggestion.
Chapter 2.
Things were going very well for Korovar merchant Sheb Vallad. Very well indeed. He had come to Otor's hub, the place to be if one dealt in certain merchandise, a standard year before the war had broken out. While others busied themselves with choosing sides, Sheb had made himself a powerful friend to both. Everybody liked trinkets, jewels, paintings, statues, fancy hookah pipes made of exotic materials and studded with gems from far distant worlds. And if the makers of such exquisite items happened to have met with unpleasant fates, well, that simply caused what they had created to become even more valuable. Most times, Sheb waited for the unpleasant fates to occur and positioned himself in a position to benefit. Sometimes, he took a more direct approach. Oh, not he himself. No, no. His hands were made for handling money and stroking valuable items. There were plenty of others willing to take his credits to do the ugly business of increasing the value of certain objects. He settled back in his chair and took a pull on his hookah, absently reaching a hand to finger the ornate carvings on the horn that jutted from his skull.
A Kurovar's horn is a Kurovar's pride, his father had told him.
It told the world everything it needed to know about the individual sporting it.
Sheb's horn was large, twisting, and lavishly decorated. Great, late artisans had carved their work upon it, and jewels caught the dim lighting in the smoky back room of his shop.
He availed himself of one of the delicate pastries that were the specialty of his private chef, then gestured to the blue-plated protocol droid who stood at attention beside the door. Someone else stood at attention, too, the ever-reliable Thurg, a burly Gamorrean.
"Show our guest in, Blue," Sheb said.
"Of course, my most glorious master."
Sheb had sprung for a customized version of the current protocol unit. Blue came equipped with two specialized programs, Agile 8 and B-Little. The former soothed Sheb, and the latter had proven vastly entertaining. Blue stepped through the curtained door into the waiting room that lay beyond while Thurg, looking slightly bored, picked at his large yellowed teeth. Sheb hoped Blue would catch him at it. The dressing down the droid would give Thurg was sure to be a delight. Though Blue probably should be grateful it was only the Gamorrean's teeth that were being picked, not the bodyguard's porcine nostrils.
"Master Tall," said the droid in his precise, clipped voice. "The most honorable, reputable, and extremely fair merchant of high-quality valuables and artifacts, Sheb Vallard, has most graciously agreed to grant your request for an audience."
"Whoa there!" came Tall's cheerful voice.
Sheb took another pastry, smiling, and poured tea for his customer. Over these last couple of months, Tall had become a regular patron, and Sheb wondered what Tall's glib tongue had in store for poor Blue today.
"I see you're set on verbal overload, Blue. And I've told you, don't call me Master."
"Today's program setting will not permit me to override the designation, I fear. Master Tall."
The droid strode through the curtain, politely holding it to the side so that Tall could enter easily. Tall Kar was a tall, well-muscled Kifar specimen who moved with an easy grace. As always, his eyes sparkled with good humor above the narrow yellow tattoo that ran the width of his face.
Thurg blocked his way with a grunt and stood expectantly. Tall rolled his eyes. "Sheb, call off your bantha. I've never brought a weapon in yet."
The Gamorrean hesitated, looking back at his master, confused.
"Thurg, you know the rules."
Tall grinned at Thurg.
"Go ahead. But you know I don't have any weapons."
"I know you no have weapons,"
Thurg said in guttural basic, patting Tall down, then stepping back.
"He unarmed.
You may now enter the radiant presence of my magnificent master,"
said Blue, sweeping his arm for good measure.
"Hey, Blue," Tall said, "how many synonyms for your name are there?"
"In basic, there are..."
Tall waved a hand.
No, in all your languages. And can you tell me what they are?"
A slightly choked sound emanated from the droid, and he visibly slumped. Then,
"Blue, my data banks register 40,011,742,983 accepted synonyms for the color blue. Beginning with basic, they are, in alphabetical order, AO, Aqua, Azure."
"You don't have to obey that instruction, Blue,"
Sheb said.
"Oh, thank you, my most marvelous master. I am exceedingly grateful."
Sheb indicated the platter of pastries.
Tall, he said with a sigh. "Are you trying to short out my droid?"
"Maybe,"
said Tall, his mouth full.
"Well, if you ever succeed, I shall expect to be compensated for repairs,"
the merchant said.
"Now, wipe your hands. I've something quite remarkable for you today."
Tall obliged with the enthusiasm of a child awaiting a gift, looking expectantly at Sheb. Sheb waved one of his assistants over. The Twi'lek female carried a tray atop which sat something covered by a piece of cloth. With a flourish, Sheb unveiled the latest treasure. Tall gasped, quite satisfactorily, which did not surprise Sheb in the least. The item on the tray was millennia old, but looked as if it had left the artist's studio but a few moments past. It was a small statuette of an aquatic creature, all memory of its species now forgotten, that had once frolicked, presumably it had frolicked, if the playful motion captured by the stone carving was to be trusted, in the oceans of a world that had been likewise lost to time. Small gems served it for eyes, and its tail curved beneath its four-flippered body to merge with a base that looked like a cresting wave. Tall reached out to it, then paused, raising his eyebrows in question. Feeling like a benevolent deity, Sheb nodded his permission to pick up the precious artifact. Tall did so with great care.
Boss, this scum say he needs to see you.
Thurg forced his way through the curtains. His huge hands were clamped down on the furry arms of a Moran who didn't struggle at all. He looked around in appreciation.
Nice, very nice, he said.
His gaze fell on Tall. Tall stared at him for a moment, then heaved a sigh. Desh, what are you doing here?
Came to get you.
Well, I'm busy. Still held by the mammoth Gamorrean, the Moran, who apparently knew Tall, and whose name was apparently Desh, actually managed to shrug.
Sorry.
What? Sheb struggled for words, trying to make sense of the absurd situation.
Tall, do you know this...
I do, from way back. He's not supposed to be here yet. Well, I guess what's done is done.
Shaking his long, black, dreadlocked hair, Tall gently put the figurine on the table, sliding it a little bit away from him. He rose.
Too bad. I liked the pastries.
He extended a hand in Sheb's direction, then jerked it upward. The merchant let out a treble yelp of astonishment as he found himself squirming in midair. At the same instant, the Moran twisted and brought his arms up, breaking Thurg's grip as if it were nothing at all, then grabbed the Gamorrean's arm and flipped him over.
Oh, I say,
squeaked a panicked Blue, heading for the door with arms raised.
Help! Help!
Four armed bodyguards charged in. The Rodian, huge black eyes fixed on Tall, slammed into the hapless droid. Blue went clattering into a corner, and the Rodian began firing at the interlopers.
No! No blasters!
Sheb shouted, thinking of the irreplaceable items on display in the room. But they ignored him. Red blaster fire screamed through the room, and Sheb, still dangling in the air, screamed along with it. First in pain at seeing his beautiful merchandise obliterated, and then again when a bolt seared through his flapping robes dangerously close to his torso. There were two other lights flashing about as well, about a meter long, one green, one blue, that Tall and the interloper wielded like swords.
Lightsabers! That meant...
Tall kept one hand extended, holding Sheb aloft, and with the other, batted back the red bolts with an almost casual ease. Was the man humming?
Yeah!
Cried the Korobar as a blast singed his thigh. Tall winced.
Sorry,
he said, smiling sheepishly up at Sheb, even as he executed a backward flip, ending in a sharp, perfectly placed kick to the midsection of a bodyguard. The Gamorrean stumbled, then toppled as Tall slammed the butt of the lightsaber into his temple. I wasn't done yet, Tall said, directing his attention to Desh. The smaller, more slender Jedi, for such Sheb realized they both had to be, was on the table now. He splayed a four-fingered hand and lifted the Rodian into the air. For an insane second, he and his employer hovered eye to eye, the Rodian's tubular muzzle undulating with protests. And then the green-skinned bodyguard was slammed against the wall.
Well, don't blame the messenger,
the Moran said. He wasn't even breathing hard.
I was told you were to be reassigned.
Two more weeks and I would have gotten the whole operation,
Tall grumbled. He, too, was speaking as calmly as if the entire exchange were occurring in his own home, over friendly drinks.
The council couldn't wait that long?
It would seem not.
Desh somersaulted from the table to the floor, grabbing two chairs in the process and hurling them at the four-eyed arachnoid Aqualish firing steadily, though fruitlessly, at Tall.
The furniture struck the bodyguard perfectly, and he went sprawling to the floor, limbs entangled in the chair's back and legs at painful-looking angles. His blaster flew out of his hands. The Marand caught it effortlessly. He whistled as he examined it.
Nice!
Oh, no, you don't, Blue, said Tall. The protocol droid had hastened over to one of the fallen bodyguards and clutched a comlink in his hand. Still keeping one hand turned toward Sheb, the Jedi leapt toward the droid and severed Blue's hand from his wrist. The droid gave a high-pitched shriek.
Oh, come on, that can be fixed, Tall said. Don't be a baby. So, did I ruin the whole mission?
Asked Desh. He thumbed his lightsaber, and with a snap hiss, the blade deactivated.
Not the whole mission. Just the really satisfying wrap-up part of it.
Miraculously, the statue of the oceanic creature had survived intact.
Tall picked it up, smiling. But this will do. I got a lot of useful information on a lot of very nasty sorts from this one.
That touchy-feely stuff you do with things does come in handy.
It's called psychometry, thank you very much.
Listening, Sheb realized why Tall, which of course wasn't this Jedi's name at all, had always been so eager to touch everything before purchasing it. Come to think of it, he hadn't purchased much, but he had certainly handled...
Sheb whimpered.
You know everything, he said, his voice taut.
Well, not everything, said Tall, not Tall. I mean, I don't know every synonym for blue, for example. Blue? How about it?
Oh, dear,
squeaked the droid.
And as for you, Sheb, it's been a pleasure doing business with you. This might hurt a bit, but I'm sure the Jedi who will be here momentarily will take care of you.
Tall lifted his hand, and as the miserable protocol droid began to list the billions of synonyms for his name, Sheb almost thought he would welcome the unconsciousness that was about to claim him, as Tall, looking apologetic, drew back his hand to send the black market merchant hurtling into the wall.
Chapter 3.
It was not his birthplace, exactly, but the Jedi Temple was where Quinlan Vos had grown up. He'd raced through its corridors, hidden behind its massive pillars, found peace in its meditation hall, ended and started fights in rooms intended for striking blows, and some that weren't, and sneaked naps in its library. All Jedi came here at some point in their lives. For Quinlan, it always felt like coming home when he ran lightly up the stairs and entered the massive building as he did now. He'd enjoyed taking down Sheb's black market operation back-to-back with his old friend, but that pleasure had been mitigated almost at once when they returned to Desh's ship. On their way back to Coruscant, Desh, whose formal name was Akar Deshu, had soberly briefed him on Dooku's devastating attack on Morani. Vos didn't know what to say to offer comfort. The planet was now controlled by the Separatists, and they had made it clear that all Marans were to be regarded as extremely hostile and killed on sight. A world and its people had fallen in the space of a few hours.
Obi-Wan Kenobi's normally modulated voice had had a slight edge of urgency to it when Vos and Desh had reported in. And it was that, more than the cryptic words, that made Vos decide to forego anything resembling formal attire. Well, anything resembling appropriate attire, if he was being honest. After the refreshing scuffle, both his clothes and he could have used a good washing. But he figured there would be a chance to clean up once he'd pinned down Obi-Wan and found out what the hell was going on. Everyone knew him here, even now, when he was often away for months, sometimes even a year at a stretch. Vos grinned happily at seeing familiar faces and exchanged so many hugs, claps on the back, and handshakes that he was concerned he might be...
Late, as usual, said Kenobi in his usual put-upon tone.
Vos glanced back up and smirked, used the Force to leap a dozen stairs, and landed gracefully before the Jedi Master.
Nice to see you too, Obi-Wan. I'm sure you've missed me.
Not terribly, Kenobi said, but he smiled as he said it. I do not recall our last adventure with particular fondness. Unfortunately, I don't think this next assignment will be nearly so pleasant, though I hope it's more successful. The two Jedi Masters had last been paired together to track down an escaped hut named Zero. Unfortunately, someone had beaten them to the hut, with fatal results for the unpleasant Zero. Obi-Wan, as befitted a Jedi, was adept at concealing his feelings in the Force when he chose to, but now he did not, and even a non-Force-sensitive could have seen the concern in his gray-blue eyes.
"This isn't going to be good, is it?"
Voss asked quietly.
"No, old friend," Kenobi said with a sigh. "It's quite far from good, actually."
"I'm listening."
Kenobi shook his head.
"No, I think I'll let the Council explain everything as they see fit."
Volumes were spoken in Kenobi's demeanor and word choice, and Voss didn't pry further.
He had a bad feeling about this.
Kenobi found the hologram no easier to watch a second time. He instead concentrated on how Voss reacted. The other Jedi seldom opted to conceal his emotions, though he could when needed, and pain was in Voss's dark brown eyes as the tragedy unfolded. And as before, there was silence when the hologram finished. Voss exhaled and pressed his lips together.
"Desh told me about the attack, but I had no idea this was why you asked me to come here. What does the Council wish of me?"
"A course of action that we reluctantly deemed necessary," said Mace.
Voss's gaze flickered to Yoda, doubtless curious as to why Windu spoke instead of the head of the Council.
"There's no way to phrase this other than bluntly. Master Voss, the Council wants you to assassinate Count Dooku."
For perhaps the first time since Kenobi had known Voss, the other Jedi was at an utter loss for words. He stared first at Windu, then at Yoda, then finally at Kenobi. He opened his mouth, possibly to protest or demand an explanation, then fell silent for a moment. When he spoke, he said quietly,
"I think I understand, but how do you propose I do this?"
"Get close to him, you will,"
said Yoda.
"Close enough to kill him? How am I supposed to manage that? I can't just walk into his palace."
"You have served the Republic well in previous undercover missions," Windu said.
"Well, sure, I've stopped some black market shipments and blasted a few smugglers. But this, it's not a one-man job."
"Correct, Master Voss is."
Kenobi raised an auburn eyebrow. The plan had been for this to be a solo endeavor, but Yoda looked tranquil as he spoke, as if they'd intended this all along.
"Go alone, he will not. More than one it will take to kill Dooku."
"Master Yoda, I volunteer to assist Master Voss," Anakin said at once.
Before Kenobi could protest, he well knew that putting Anakin and Quinlan together on a mission was simply asking for trouble. Yoda shook his own head.
"One there is who has tried and failed. Yet closer has she come than any other to killing Count Dooku."
Now it was Kenobi's turn to stare at the wizened Council leader.
"You can't possibly mean Ventress."
"Ventress?" Voss echoed. "Not Dooku's apprentice, Ventress. The one who's been a thorn in our side for years?"
Yoda nodded serenely. Asajj Ventress had indeed once been Count Dooku's Sith apprentice and pet assassin. Kenobi and Anakin had crossed lightsabers with her on more than one occasion. Tall, lithe, exceptionally skilled in the Force, the former Night Sister was a formidable foe. But if anyone hated Dooku, it was her. Ventress's former master had tried to kill her. Rumor had it she'd attempted to return the favor more than once.
Wait, I can't have heard this right," Voss said. "The Jedi Council wants me to work with a Sith?"
Kenobi shifted uneasily in his chair. Ludicrous as the idea sounded, when one set aside its very unexpectedness, it actually made a great deal of sense.
"Failed, Sif," Kenobi corrected. "I wouldn't go so far as to call her trustworthy, but it's true that our desires do align on this one point, and no one knows him as well as she does. I must concur with Master Yoda. Asajj Ventress would be a tremendous resource, and one that could prove vital to the success of this mission."
"Failed is an interesting choice of words, considering Ventress has failed at more than being the perfect Sith,"
Windu snapped. He seemed surprised at Kenobi's words.
"She's attempted to kill Dooku repeatedly, and obviously not succeeded."
"She acted alone before,"
Kenobi said. He turned to Voss.
"This time, she won't be. She'll have you."
Voss's furrowed brow smoothed out, and his dark eyes crinkled with their customary mischief above the yellow tattoo that crossed his face.
"Didn't know you were such a romantic, Kenobi."
"Sure you won't be jealous?"
Turning more serious, he asked,
"How much help could she be? She hasn't been around Dooku for a while now. Why would she want to work with us anyway? She won't be eager to help Jedi."
"The same man our enemy is,"
Yoda said.
"Aid us, she can. Although she must not know she does so. His personality, his way of thinking, the places he knows and retreats to. Knows all this, Ventress does."
He leaned forward, peering at Voss from eyes huge beneath his deeply wrinkled brow.
"Ignorant of your pursuit, your quarry must be, of course. But ignorant also of her aid must Asajj Ventress be."
"This is getting too complicated," Voss said. "Maybe this is a one-man job. No disrespect. But if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it on my own. Clean and simple. She'll just get in the way."
Yoda's face relaxed into a combination of gentleness and implacability.
"Always know you to walk alone, the Council does. Underestimate Ventress, you do. Skilled she is. Her help you must take, or fail you will."
Kenobi felt a not unpleasant chill as Yoda uttered the words. He knew what that meant. Few were stronger in the Force than Yoda, and while the diminutive green-skinned master was always humble and cautioned that one could never predict the ever-changing future with complete accuracy, there were some things that he simply knew to be the right path. This was one of them. The rippling in the Force told Kenobi that his fellow council members, all of whom were familiar with Yoda's unique insight, had sensed this as well. Picking up on the energetic shift in the room, Voss sighed.
"All right, I accept the mission. I'll find Ventress and get her cooperation, somehow. And I will assassinate Count Dooku. But I can't promise that Ventress will survive this any more than Dooku will once I'm through with him."
"See all ends. You cannot, young one."
"I can see the end of this session, Master Yoda," Voss said. "And it ends with me bowing, getting a shower and a meal, and likely getting more details from, I'm guessing, Master Kenobi."
Some frowned at Voss's impertinence, but Yoda's green-gold eyes were warm with amusement.
"Correct you are, on all counts. Even the right order have you determined."
He sobered.
"Cheers the spirit, humor does. Even at the darkest times. Yet grave this task is, and fraught with peril. May the Force be with you, Quinlan Voss."
The shower was welcome. The meal in the group dining hall, even more so. All Jedi Padawans began their training at young ages, with little or no recollection of their families. Voss, brought to the temple even younger than most, felt that he had hundreds of brothers and sisters, and it seemed that whenever he went into the dining hall, he ran into at least half of them. It was wonderful. Popularity, adulation. A Jedi, as Yoda might have said, craved not those things. nor did Voss, really. But it made him happy to see his companions, to meet the overly solemn Padawans and squirmy puppy younglings, and it was with reluctance that he left to go on his next assignment. He often thought that it was his ability to enjoy wherever he was and the company of whomever he was with that made him, perhaps ironically, so successful in jobs that took him to the worst places and saw him in the company of the worst people. But Quinlan Voss had always ventured into stuffy, closed rooms, darkened alleys, and isolated outposts alone. No one else to keep track of, to be beholden to, or to worry about. Once you realized that everyone with whom you associated was potentially happy to literally stab you in the back, all the wondering just went away. Simple, clean, uncomplicated. From everything he'd heard, Asajj Ventress was about as complicated as anyone could get. Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Yoda had all gone toe-to-toe with her. There was clearly something about the woman that, on some level, they respected.
"Well, you're here long enough to shower and eat,"
Desh said as he plopped a tray down and sat across from Voss. "Maybe even sleep," Voss said, smiling as he sliced open a white-striped purple jogan fruit.
"Such luxury,"
Desh winked and dived into a generous slice of steak.
"Don't get used to it."
"I never do," said Voss.
"Don't suppose you can talk about it?"
"Can I ever?"
Desh thought about it, chewing, then shook his head.
"Usually not. But there's something about it that concerns you."
"The perils of old friends," Voss said with a sigh.
"Well, I'm to have a partner."
"I know you prefer to work alone, but yet I often work in pairs,"
Desh replied.
"That's just it. She's not a Jedi. And she's not even supposed to know that I'm one. Plus," Voss added, "this mission we're supposed to undertake together, it's extremely delicate and dangerous. I don't like wondering if my partner's more dangerous than the actual target."
"Well,"
Desh said,
"the temple can prepare us for everything. That's part of the fun."
"And in what area is the temple failing you at this moment, Master Voss?"
was Kenobi, smiling pleasantly as he joined them.
"You know, I'm glad you asked," Voss said.
"Oh dear,"
Kenobi sighed.
"I know how to work with my fellow Jedi and with civilians," Voss said. "I know how to deal with underworld scum and their hangers-on. But you know and I know that this partner is unique. And I need to know what sort of interaction she's going to expect."
"Ah," said Kenobi. "Desh, can you excuse us? Voss will need to depart from his mission early tomorrow. And there are some..."
He hesitated.
"Things he should know about it."
"Of course, Master Kenobi,"
Desh said.
"Later, Voss."
He picked up his tray and left them to it. Kenobi turned to Voss.
"Rather like you, Ventress appears to work alone."
"Frankly, we don't know how she'll react," Kenobi said.
"But there are a few things about her personality I've learned. She's driven, focused, and hates Dooku. Once you've gained her trust and she sees a real chance at killing her former master, I think you'll be able to depend on her completely."
"Well, that's good. But how do I get to that part?"
"Asajj Ventress is highly intelligent and doesn't suffer fools gladly. Skill and competence impress her."
Kenobi hesitated.
"She's also a very striking woman. Physically. It might tip her off if you, don't notice her. And she likes to trade barbs."
Voss snagged a fried kajaka root from Obi-Wan's plate and popped it into his mouth.
"You were fighting her and chatting at the same time?"
Kenobi nodded.
"It's..." He searched for the word. "Banter."
"You flirted with her?"
"Come now, Voss. You can't tell me you managed to go undercover in all sorts of shady places without flirting yourself. With Ventress, it's a power play, a way for her to exert control. It will serve you best if you engage in it with her."
Voss tapped his chest.
"Jedi?" he said exaggeratedly.
No attachments, remember? How far is too far? Be a little rough around the edges. Leer a bit. She'll make it plain enough she's not interested, and take satisfaction in telling you so. She'll see it as a win. Voss sighed. I think, he said, taking another one of Kenobi's fried root strips, killing Dooku is going to be the easy part. Kenobi did not contradict him.
Chapter 4 Level 1313 was so named because it was 1,313 levels from the core of the planet. Voss suspected it was easier to think of it that way, rather than focusing on the weight of almost 4,000 other levels between oneself and the surface. The difference between Coruscant's literal and figurative underworld and the one that saw the sun was sufficiently stark that they might as well be located in two different systems. Crimes that would be viewed as appalling above were everyday occurrences here. The Jedi wondered, not for the first time, how many would be born, live, and die here, never having glimpsed the sun, let alone the stars. He strode past shivering figures with hands outstretched to small fires burning in metal drums. Voices called out to him.
Please, sir, got anything to eat? Or some credits to spare?
Hey, handsome. I know what you want.
Right this way. We've got what you're looking for. Exotic items from across the galaxy.
With a gentle brush of the Force, a flick of a finger, and a non-committal smile, Voss caused each inquirer to forget they had seen him, focusing on his goal, a bar that looked, well, pretty much like every other bar Voss had patronized in the last few years. He loved this part of a mission. When anything and everything could happen. When it was all new and exciting, and hadn't yet devolved into something dirty, complicated, and usually far too banal. The door hissed open to admit him, though the air was hazy with the smoke of various substances being burned. Voss could nonetheless make out the forms of females of various species gyrating to the thump of loud, primal music. Quickly, he scanned the place, looking for the individuals he had come to find. One, a green-skinned reptilian Trandoshan, dressed in a yellow flight suit, sat at the bar. Voss spotted the others, nestled farther in the darker corners of the establishment, but they would come later. Most of the patrons were huddled deep in conversation, but there was an empty space near the Trandoshan. Voss strode up, getting the server droid's attention and gesturing to what appeared to be the drink of choice for the establishment, said cheerily to no one in particular,
"Hey, how's it going?"
A couple of the patrons gave him sidelong glances, but no one replied. Undaunted, Voss took a seat, nodding to the droid who slid a cup filled with something thick and dark in his direction, and continued,
"You gentlemen have any leads on any jobs?"
The Trandoshan, Bosk, Voss recalled, known for hunting Wookiees with a viciousness and thoroughness that surpassed even that of most Trandoshans, member of the Bounty Hunters Guild, hissed in either amusement or annoyance, or perhaps both.
"This ain't no hospitality service, buddy. You're either in a no or you ain't. And clearly, you ain't."
With this pithy comment, he turned back to his drink, clearly feeling he had said all that needed to be said. Voss gave it a beat, knocked back his drink as if he welcomed the horrible acidic taste, then said casually,
"I guess the bald banshee is stealing everybody's gigs these days."
The constant murmur of voices and the clanking of ceramic ware and cutlery paused among those within earshot. Voss turned to regard Voss again, stared at him stonily for a moment, then laughed.
"That woman is trouble."
He clapped Voss on the shoulder with a three-fingered clawed hand and gestured at the server droid.
"Give my new friend another one of whatever he's drinking. On me."
Voss nodded his thanks.
"So, she stole a job from you, huh?"
Instead of answering directly, Voss inquired,
"Where is she these days?"
The Trandoshan's eyes narrowed slightly.
No idea.
Gently, subtly, Voss extended a sense of camaraderie into the Force as he spoke.
I'd like to get a little payback. Know what I mean?
Bossk regarded him for a moment longer, then seemed to make a decision.
I know someone who might know where she is. Come on.
He rose and started across the room, shoving his way through the crowd with no finesse and a great deal of confidence. Voss followed his new best friend to a booth back in one of the darkest corners of the bar. An Anuba, its long tail curled almost twice around its canine pale-striped form, dozed under the table. It awoke at Voss's approach and started to snarl. With a slight wave of his hand, Voss calmed it just enough. It wouldn't do for the beast to suddenly become overly friendly, but an attack wouldn't help his mission either. It sniffed the air, and its growl turned into a whine as it relaxed, though its ears and eyes showed that it remained alert. Seated in the booth were a Thelan bounty hunter with strawberry blonde hair styled in deceptively innocent-looking pigtails. Lots Razi, preferred weapon the grappling boa. A male Cayuso with an enormous and doubtless heavy metallic hat. Embo utilizes the hat as both weapon and transportation, held in high regard among his fellow bounty hunters. Owner of the Anuba, Marok. A droid, high singer, extremely effective bounty hunter, believed to be unique. And an earnest-looking, shaved-headed young man, who had to be...
Hey, Boba,
said Bossk.
This guy is looking for no name. The rookie.
Boba Fett was young, looking to be only in his late teens.
Rookie,
Fett snorted.
Don't you believe it. That woman knows exactly what she's doing.
And what she's doing is...
conning people. Why do you want to know anyway?
Fett scowled into his drink, refusing to elaborate. Clearly Ventress was a touchy subject. Voss was unsurprised.
Like you, I got cheated out of a couple of big payouts,
he offered.
She didn't cheat us,
Lots Rotzi piped up. She swirled her cocktail, her eyes twinkling with humor as she peered up at Voss.
We got our pay. Just not how the boss here likes it.
True enough, muttered Fett. But I don't like her style.
He drained his drink for emphasis.
Agreed, Voss said mildly.
He didn't attempt to directly influence any of the bounty hunters. They hadn't gotten their reputations by being weak-minded. He simply stood, exuding good cheer, which wasn't a pretense. Fett looked Voss up and down.
You think you can give her a run? Make some trouble for her?
I'm certain of it.
Fett nodded, seemingly satisfied.
All right. I got a tip she took a job on Pantora, chasing down a Volpi named Moragai.
He removed a holoprojector from his pocket, and the small image of a four-armed humanoid sprang to life on his outstretched palm. His expression darkened as he regarded the figure.
I was going to take that job myself, until I heard she got involved. You think you can handle her? Be my guest.
He tossed the holoprojector to Voss as if it were a discarded Sabacc chip. Voss caught it deftly. Bossk grinned at him.
Let's hope you're man enough.
Voss flipped the holoprojector in his palm, winked, and left. But not before he heard what Boba Fett doubtless thought was the final word on the subject.
He has no idea what he's getting himself into.
True enough, Voss thought with a mental shrug. I never do.
And that was half the fun. Pantora was the primary moon in orbit around the planet Orto Plutonia. The moon was as temperate as the planet was icy and hostile, and had an elegant cityscape with the repeating pattern of domes shaped like teardrops, or less poetically, onions. The Pantorans, for whatever reason, seemed inordinately fond of building on multiple levels. Parks, walkways, and other varieties of decorative architectural constructs adorned what on other worlds would be unremarkable rooftops. Asajj Ventress was not a poetic woman, and the architecture of Pandora concerned her only in as much as it was making it difficult for her to track down her quarry. At the present moment, she stood atop a flattened version of such a tear-shaped dome, vision-enhancing goggles whirring and clicking as they readjusted. She'd gotten a tip that her quarry preferred this part of the capital city, coming here to simply wander. A specific site would have been more helpful, a bar, a brothel, even a particular statue. But Ventress had learned to cultivate patience in the last several months. Her augmented gaze traveled over the decorative buildings and multicolored trees that broke up the expanses of the red stone with which the Pantorans seemed to like to decorate their public spaces. The day was a pleasant one, and many Pantorans were out enjoying the sunshine. Speeders zipped overhead, though without the frantic urgency of those navigating the sky lanes of Coruscant. There were clusters of family units, from adults to infants, setting out picnics in the shade of the trees while the younglings ambled about happily. Young lovers were here too, strolling with their heads bent close to each other. Ventress's gaze lingered a moment on a family, a male and female Mirialin with three younglings of various ages. The male was giving one of them a ride on his back, and the boy was clearly delighted. The adult female, presumably the mother, looked on smiling fondly. With a muttered oath of self-chastisement, Ventress returned to her search. But she couldn't shake the image. Once, she had belonged to a family. A sisterhood. Strong and proud. Now they were dead, and she would never hold a sister's child. All because of Dooku. Those Mirialans were fools. They did not understand how easily and completely a single moment could destroy everything. Let them laugh in their ignorance and play with their spawn while they could. Slowly, Ventress moved her head, covered now with short, pale blonde hair, tracking along the open areas. A few lonely citizens sat on the steps of various buildings, eating their lunches. Some threw pieces of their meals to various small creatures, which survived by looking appealing to bored sentients who... Ventress paused, adjusting the electrobinocular goggles slightly, and a smile curved her lips. He was hunched over, four eyes blinking slowly, one hand holding a sandwich. A second arm held a cup, while the other two were plucking a crust to toss to the small, rodent-like creatures, whose tails flickered energetically as they consumed the food. Moragai. There's my Volpi, Ventress said softly, her voice a satisfied purr. She quickly calculated the best approach, fired a cable from her current rooftop to a lower one, then hooked the bow over it and slid down. She landed gracefully and straightened, gazing down at her quarry. As if sensing her, the Volpi froze in his actions of feeding the animals and slowly turned his head. Their eyes met. Ventress was unconcerned that she had been made. No bounty yet had escaped her. She dropped to the pavement and walked toward him casually, smiling as he leapt to his feet, bellowed at her, and took off. Let the chase begin. Moragai slammed deliberately into a passerby, sending them tumbling behind him to block Ventress's pursuit. Four arms lent him extra dexterity as he leapt onto statuary, swung from overhands, and frightened various mounts and their riders. While the chaos prevented Ventress from getting the clear shot she wanted, which would have ended the hunt in record time, she was not averse to giving chase. The force buoyed her and guided her, and the prey was not so clever as to be entirely unpredictable to her keen senses. Moragai had to utilize his sheer physicality to shove his way through the crowd. Ventress, whose friend was the Force, conserved her energy for the final capture by simply soaring over the crowds of frightened fallen pedestrians with a few well-timed leaps. She thought she had him when the Volpi ran out of rooftop. Moragai hesitated, glancing over his shoulder at Ventress. Then he took a running jump and somehow made it to the next rooftop.
Not bad,
Ventress granted him,
effortlessly making the leap herself. She let the Force tell her what Moragai would do next, and followed its guidance when she lost sight of him briefly. She cut a corner on one of the rooftops when he sought to throw her off by racing along the streets. She smiled to herself as she saw him emerge, and arcing her body, she dived atop him. They slammed hard to the ground. The impact forced her to tumble away from him, and she leapt lightly to her feet, facing him. The bounty was higher if she brought him in alive. So as Moragai stared at her, panting, Ventress was calculating the best way to bring him down. Suddenly, she caught a flurry of movement out of the corner of her eye, and a figure sailed across her field of vision. Her Volpi went down beneath it. Ventress was so taken aback, she simply stared in astonishment as the two grappled. Recovering, she demanded,
"What is this?"
The dark-haired humanoid, struggling with his two arms to pin down the arms of a being who had four, turned his head and shot her a grin.
"It's called a tackle."
Chapter 5.
Fury surged within Ventress, and her voice dropped to its lowest, most dangerous timbre.
"Who are you?"
Moragai was still straining against the interloper. The man, though, again grinned up at Ventress.
"Relax. I've got this one, honey."
And he actually winked.
"Honey?"
Asajj Ventress stepped forward, yanked the laser brain off her bounty, and punched him soundly in the jaw. With a satisfying grunt, he went sprawling, staring up at her incredulously as his hand went to his mouth. Moragai, equally incredulous, stared wildly from Ventress to the intruder. Then, with a delighted cackle, he sprang to his feet and was off again in a heartbeat. Ventress set off in pursuit, her outrage lending her speed. She didn't spare the interloper another glance. Whatever the idiot's goal had been, be it a serious attempt to steal her bounty, or simply an excessive and ill-advised display of perceived masculine superiority, he had only delayed the inevitable. Moragai had a couple of seconds lead on her now. An ordinary tracker would have lost him amid the unnecessary and vexing rooftop architecture. But Ventress was able to keep him in sight until he darted into a cluster of trees and yet another park area. She halted, catching her breath, trying to reach out in the Force to find him. But there were so many life forms in close proximity that it wasn't possible. Silently, she moved around, senses alert. She was fairly certain he hadn't leapt to another forested rooftop. The gap would be too large for any non-Force user to bridge without tools, and the Volpi had none. Did any world really need this many trees on its rooftops? If it hadn't been for the stranger's interference, she'd have had Moragai three times over by this point. Granted, she'd been the one to lose her temper and surrender to the impulse to punch the cocky fool. She sensed a presence behind her and closed her eyes, gathering strength.
"Do you normally go around stealing other people's bounties?"
she snapped as the dark-haired idiot slipped in beside her, a blaster drawn.
"Oh, is this just my lucky day?"
He stepped forward, moving with grace and skill as he peered around the trees.
"Bounties are fair game. You must be new at this."
She arched a brow.
He grinned. "Play nice? You may get lucky later."
The flirtation attempt was so atrocious that Ventress couldn't even find it in her to be offended.
"You're lucky I don't kill you right now,"
she muttered, slipping around a tree trunk. No Volpi.
"Luck is exactly what you'd need to kill me," he replied.
Crunch. It was a faint sound, but both of them tensed. Moragai must have thought that they were so engaged in exchanging quips that he could sneak past them. Ventress's respect for the unnamed bounty stealer went up a small notch. Few ears were sharp enough to have detected the soft noise. It was time to end this, and her patience, both with the idiot and with the bounty, had worn out. Ventress homed in on the source of the sound,
extended a hand, and casually uprooted the tree behind which Morgai had been hiding. He stared at her, four eyes wide with shock, then fled toward the edge of the rooftop. Ventress followed, and so did the idiot. She shoved him aside in irritation.
Don't even think about it. He's mine.
She wondered what Morgai had in mind, if anything. He wouldn't be able to leap to the next rooftop, and the fall was... He jumped. Ventress and the idiot slid to a halt at the edge and peered over to see the Volpi swinging nimbly from the hanging signs of various shops, putting his extra two arms to exceptional use. With the skill of a Wookiee, he went from Ogsor's fine millinery to fashions by Fajilki to a fit for all feet, while Ventress and the idiot paced him atop the roof. The chase had brought them from the public parks into what was clearly a high-fashion merchant area, and Ventress spared a moment to be amused at the looks of the wealthy, well-groomed Pantorans peering nervously up at the gymnastic Volpi. Morgai hung from the swinging sign that proclaimed the Paisley Picobai, having run out of convenient handholds, and as he hesitated about where to leap next, Ventress dived straight for him. Her hands closed on his shirt. Her momentum carried them forward, crashing through another sign with a depiction of various desserts. Ventress shot out a hand and grabbed hold of a pipe that ran the width of the building. Morgai's shirt tore, and he slipped from her grasp, but she reached out a second time and seized his hand. He clung to it, ready to take his chances with her rather than fall several stories to the unforgiving pavement. Using the force to lock her fingers in place on the pipe, Ventress tightened her grip on Morgai's hand, but his palm was sweaty from the chase, and he began to slide inexorably downward.
"You slippery forearmed slime ball!" she shouted.
He fell, six limbs waving frantically like an insect, his mouth open in a scream. Ventress was already moving her fingers to catch him with the force when Morgai thumped down on the hood of a passing speeder. She gaped, stunned at the Volpi's impossibly good luck, as he clambered for a better grip aboard the vessel. He craned his neck and lifted one of his arms in a rude gesture.
"Me Jusco, Wormo!"
"See you, suckers."
"You have got to be kidding me,"
Ventress thought. "Unbelievable." Well, there was nothing for it but to start the chase. For the fourth time, Ventress dropped lithely to the street level and began to run. She was strong and fit, but she was beginning to think that this might be an exceptionally long chase, and so emulated her prey by hopping onto the back of a bright red vessel as it whisked past. She kept her gaze focused on the blue airspeeder to which her bounty clung like a burr on a bantha. As it rounded a curve, the speeder disappeared from Ventress's view for the space of a heartbeat, and when her own speeder made the turn, the shiny blue surface of the vehicle was noticeably devoid of a Volpi hitchhiker. Her gaze flickered to the sidewalks, where she caught some movement, and she nimbly leapt from the back of her hijacked speeder. But by the time she had rolled back to her feet, her quarry had disappeared into the crowd. Ventress sighed. Slowing her pace to a less attention-grabbing walk, she moved through the throng, constantly searching for Morgai. It seemed there was a street festival of some sort in the area today. If the profusion of vendors and the appetizing smell of food were reliable indicators. She emerged into the city's main square, the center of which was dominated by an enormous statue. The bearded man with a kindly paternal face had struck a dramatic pose atop a pillar. Four stone narglatches, fearsome predators with a mane of fleshy spines, roared silently at the base. Ventress sensed the annoying interloper behind her again, and folding her arms, turned to regard him. He was easy on the eyes, with that mane of black dreadlocked hair, strong features with an unusual tattoo of a yellow stripe, and a lithe but muscular body. His pleasant looks didn't lessen her ire one whit, however.
"You just don't know when to quit, do you?"
"You know, this would be a lot easier if we worked together," he said, as if she hadn't even spoken. He extended a hand, ready to shake hers. She batted it aside and pushed forward.
I work alone.
Okay, partner, he replied cheerily.
I am not your partner,
she retorted, steaming ahead of him and jumping onto the topmost step of the monument. She scanned the crowd.
You sure are dedicated, he said behind her.
Ventress pointed a stiff index finger directly into his face.
Don't test me.
She held his gaze for a moment, then turned back to her search.
Look, it's not my fault you lost him.
That did it. She whirled and clamped her hand over his mouth.
Stay out of my way,
she warned. She felt his lips move against her hand and tightened her grip, shaking him by the jaw like a dog she was muzzling.
I mean it.
Again, the lips moved. But his eyes weren't on her, and he lifted a hand to point. He said. She turned to see that Morugai had caught yet another ride. Still gripping the idiot's mouth closed, Ventress said,
Looks like you're useful after all.
She shoved him backward, leapt onto the back of a stone narglatch, and then sprang onto an idling single-seat speeder. The Rhodian driver protested, but Ventress kicked him in the chest, and he fell to the pavement, recovering sufficiently to curse her as she took off after her quarry. She closed the gap between them quickly. Before he could leap to another vehicle, Ventress rose in her seat and knocked her bow. Even moving, she couldn't miss at this range. Morugai shocked her by not fleeing. He leapt directly at her. Ventress found herself flat on the back of a narrow vessel careening at full speed with a four-armed vulpi atop her, trying to crush her trachea with her own bow. They tumbled off her stolen speeder onto the hood of another one. Ventress grunted, air knocked out of her lungs, yet again by the bulk of the surprisingly vigorous Morugai. She shoved upward, but he yanked the bow from her grip and tossed it away. Ventress was done with finesse. That bow had been given to her by her fellow Night Sisters. Snarling like an animal, she used the force to augment her own not inconsiderable strength, flipped the vulpi over, and straddled him. She had two arms pinned, but the second pair and his powerful legs worked together to first seize her and then kick her over his head. She nearly slid off the vessel, whose Pantoran driver was more than likely desperately regretting his decision to venture forth this morning, but levitated herself back onto it. A vulpi leg kicked at her, and as she rolled out of the way, one of two flailing lower arms smacked her in the ribs. Only her sharply honed instincts allowed her to pull back enough to take the worst out of the blow. Shooting to her feet, she followed with a good uppercut. But even using the force to anticipate Morugai's moves, she was at a disadvantage fighting someone who had four fists. Ducking to avoid another punch, she reached for his shoulder to unbalance him, and was rocked by a left hook that connected solidly with her jaw. As she struggled to regain her balance, tightening her grip on him, she felt a piece of his shoulder plating come loose in her hand, and then she was falling. Air whooshed by her. Her head still spinning from Morugai's blow, she reached out to the force to slow her fall and was caught by a strong hand that shot out of nowhere. Dangling a few meters above the street, Ventress peered up to see the idiot gazing down at her from another speeder. Deftly, he lowered the vessel, releasing her to drop safely onto the pavement and brought his stolen speeder to the ground. Ventress touched her mouth and moved her jaw cautiously. It wasn't broken, but it hurt like mad.
It's the fourth arm that always gets you,
she muttered. She eyed the idiot, waiting for the inevitable flippant comment. Instead, he pressed his lips together and shook his head.
We would have caught him if you'd let me help you.
She scowled. It hurt her mouth.
I told you, I don't need your help.
Well, he said, reaching behind him, it didn't look that way just now.
He was holding her bow. Ventress eyed it, then him. She snatched the bow from his grasp.
Am I supposed to be grateful that you stepped in? Meanwhile, you let the bounty get away.
Hey, I'm not the one who let him get away. Ventress stepped forward with cool deliberation.
You should stop talking now, she said.
The idiot backed up as she approached.
Or I swear, I will blast you back to whatever hole you crawled out of.
She put a hand on his chest, let it linger there just long enough, then shoved him out of the way. She felt him watching her as she strode off. She didn't care. Let him get an eyeful. The back of her was all he was ever going to see. Her bounty had escaped. She was tired. Her jaw was on fire. And she'd had to deal with someone who was the single most annoying man she had ever met. A drink was definitely in order.
Chapter 6.
Boss was used to being told he didn't know when to quit. But those who said so were wrong. He did know when. Now, for instance, was an excellent time to quit. For a little while, anyway. Ventress's aquiline nose was far too out of joint for any progress to be made. He'd give her some time to cool off, then try again. Voss was more than a little confused. He liked the persona he'd created for this mission. He was dashing, and witty, and strong, and flirty. Okay, the persona was really pretty much his usual self, except for the flirty part. But what else was he supposed to do? Ventress, although more than a little scary, even Voss had to admit, was an attractive woman. Slender but deceptively strong, with unusual ice-blue eyes and, well, a lot of other things that people might reasonably notice. Of course she'd get a lot of attention. Unwanted, obviously, but she had doubtless come to expect it. And even Kenobi had pointed out that Voss couldn't afford to stand out too much. He was already pushing it by simply attempting to ally with her. He could see that now. Voss followed Ventress easily, making sure she didn't spot him. It was a practice he had mastered long ago. That part of going undercover, at least, was familiar to him. She had no speeder, but went on foot, so he was spared the necessity of using the Force to convince someone to part with their vehicle, or of just stealing another. His stomach rumbled. Chasing after the agile Moragai had worked up an appetite. He purchased a sandwich of roasted local vegetables and ate as he trailed his assignment. Once or twice, he thought she'd made him, and he ducked into a doorway or stepped behind a conveniently large pedestrian. By the time he'd finished his snack, wishing he had bought something to wash it down with, Ventress was approaching a bar. Perfect timing, he murmured, and smiled. Her half-hour walk ought to have allowed her space enough to cool her anger, and maybe let her guard down a bit. He slid into the seat beside her, and tossed a credit onto the bar. Ventress turned to him, and her dismay would have been comical had it not been so obviously sincere.
"Can't I get a moment of peace?" she exclaimed, throwing her hands up in the air and then resting her face in them.
"Why do you want a moment of peace? I thought you were all on fire to go get that Vulpi."
He pointed to a pitcher of something at the bartender's elbow.
"I had the Vulpi until you felt compelled to tackle him,"
she reminded him.
Your idiocy cost me 25,000 credits.
Voss accepted the drink with a nod of thanks.
If we had worked together, we would be splitting those credits right now, he said.
I have this memory, she said, her husky voice dropping even deeper with dislike. This memory of telling you that the bounty was mine, that I didn't need your help and to stay out of my way.
Funny. I have a memory where you told me I could be useful.
And,
she continued as if he hadn't spoken,
I also told you that I wasn't your partner and that I work alone.
Voss imagined that just the venom in her words would have cowed an ordinary man. Fortunately, he wasn't one.
Doesn't have to be that way,
She opened her mouth. At that precise instant, a small light on his right bracer began to blink.
Terrible timing, Kenobi,
he thought. Then,
actually, probably excellent timing.
He lifted a finger and said,
hold that thought. I'm sure it'll be blistering. I'll be right back.
She looked disappointed. Not, he knew, at the fact that he was leaving, but at the fact that she couldn't fire another volley of insults in his direction. Sighing, Ventress contented herself with saying,
I don't care.
If she truly didn't care, she wouldn't try to leave. And if she did attempt to sneak out, he'd follow her. Voss nodded and stepped out into the bustle of the street. A safe distance away, he activated the holoprojector. A small, blue Obi-Wan Kenobi regarded him with a slight smile.
I must say, I'm relieved to see you're still alive. How are things progressing?
How to answer that one? She's everything you described, and more, Voss said.
Kenobi looked pleased.
Ah, so you've gained her trust? She's willing to work with you?
Voss considered, recalling the incidents of the last hour.
I wouldn't say work with me so much as allow me to be in the general vicinity of her.
I can't say I'm surprised. No one expected this to be an easy mission. Something is better than nothing at all.
Your lack of faith wounds me. I'll have her eating out of my hand in no time.
With the Force, all things are possible. Except that.
Okay, maybe I exaggerated a little.
Kenobi had that familiar, slightly pained expression, like he often did when Anakin piped up with something outrageous but exciting.
Only a trifle, I'm sure. Keep the Council and me apprised of the situation.
Will do.
May the Force be with you. No doubt you'll need it.
Even though the hologram was only a few centimeters high, Voss could see a twinkle in Kenobi's eye. Despite the direness of the mission, the other Jedi was enjoying this.
Ha ha.
Voss deactivated the holo-emitter and stuck it back in his pocket. Obi-Wan hadn't said it, but Voss knew it was implied. He needed to seal the deal with Ventress, and quickly. She was still there when he sauntered back into the bar, sparing him a brief glance before returning her attention to a green piece of metal plating.
You know, funny thing,
he mused, as if it had just occurred to him.
I don't even know the name of the woman who's been such a pain in my neck all day.
A ghost of a smile touched her full lips.
Just the neck?
He shrugged, and for the first time that day, the smile he gave her was genuine.
Well, for now.
She held his gaze, her ice-chip eyes regarding him not with anger and annoyance this time, but with evaluation. Voss had been raised in the Jedi Temple. He had been constantly tested, judged, and critiqued during his youth, and he knew that every time he stood before the Jedi Council, they were considering his appropriateness for whatever mission they tasked him with. Being scrutinized was not a new experience for him. But this was different. Kenobi had told him Ventress didn't suffer fools. And yet Voss knew he had been behaving like one around her since they had met. This was the moment, he realized, when his mission would either succeed or fail spectacularly. Kenobi had also cautioned him against trying to use the Force to manipulate Ventress in any way.
She's extraordinarily strong-willed. And she's more experienced in the Force than many Jedi Knights, he had said.
Voss relaxed into the appraisal. He was coming to respect Asajj Ventress. She had demonstrated that she was good at what she did. And he'd already told her he thought she was a pain in the neck. These were real, true feelings. And he was comfortable with them both. He'd rolled the dice. Now was the time to watch them land. He met her gaze evenly and waited.
Ventress,
she said finally.
Voss,
he extended a hand. She eyed it, and then they shook. It was the first time she'd touched him without anger, or, at the very least, annoyance. He gestured to the metal plating she had been examining.
What's that?
She made a sour face and took a swig of her drink.
Oh, I pulled it off the Vulpi. Jackpot.
Can I see it? Ventress looked at him with mild curiosity, then shrugged.
Here. It's of no use, anyway.
Keeping an expression of mild curiosity on his face, Voss extended himself into the Force, closing his fingers around the object of no use and opening to what it had to tell him. He wasn't concerned about revealing himself to Ventress. His psychometry shell was so smoothly integrated in the Force that no one, not even fellow Jedi Masters, had been able to detect it. The bar, with its music and conversations and clinking of glasses, retreated, growing faint and distant. Voss felt as if he were falling forward into a hole, but the sensation was a familiar and comfortable one. Images rushed up. A female Rodian with gray skin holding a blue youngling. He bounced up and down in his mother's lap excitedly, clutching a small stuffed toy. He warbled as a hand reached out to caress his small cheek, and a face came into Voss's view. Moragai's face. Only a glimpse, but it was enough. The Vulpi's movements were gentle and slow, and his expression was kind. Occasionally, Voss was able to sense emotions as well as see and hear, and his own heart was suddenly warm with Moragai's love for both mother and child. Voss mentally disconnected from the Vulpi's feelings and manipulated the image in his mind's eye, drawing back to take in the rest of the room. He focused on the details, memorizing them quickly. A narrow bell-shaped window with a potted flowering plant and curtains of blue and yellow. The view out the window showed the angry zigs and zags of graffiti in green and purple paint in a language he didn't know. The image faded, and the sights and sounds of the bar returned. Only a few seconds had passed. He handed the "of great use after all" object back to Ventress with a non-committal gesture. "I don't think Moragai has left the planet. I might know where he is." She eyed him skeptically.
"Really?"
she said.
"And how would you know that?"
"I got a tip."
"You might have said so earlier."
"Well," Voss said, "I only share that information with partners."
"I see."
He rose. "You coming?" Again, the thorough scrutiny. The Nassage Ventress tossed a couple of credits on the bar, rose, and followed.
"This tip must not have been very good,"
Ventress said about half an hour later as they stood once again on a rooftop.
"You seem to just be wandering around."
Voss frowned. His gift was useful, but far from perfect. He didn't get to select what it revealed to him, though he could direct it somewhat. It would have been nice if he could have picked up a street address, but he had only a brief glimpse of run-down buildings to go on. Of course, he couldn't tell that to Ventress.
"I'm just zeroing in on the right place," he said with as much confidence as he could muster.
He recalled the details and concentrated on looking for graffiti in colors of purple and green.
"I think this is it."
He pointed to a window several floors up in a tall, narrow building. The blue and yellow curtains were closed.
"Let's find out, shall we?"
Ventress lifted her bow. Both string and bolt glowed pink. As she fired, Voss realized that they were made of plasma energy, as was the cable that snaked across the distance between the two buildings.
"Oh, hey, that's handy," said Voss.
"Yes,"
Ventress agreed.
"It is."
She positioned the bow atop the plasma cable, grasped each end of the weapon, and slid down the cable to the ground without another word. Voss eyed her, sighed in minor annoyance. He had to go down the old-fashioned way, climbing like someone who couldn't use the Force so as not to tip her off. Ventress awaited him impatiently,
The door of the main entrance slid aside at a touch, and they took a rickety lift up to the fourth floor. As they approached the apartment door, Voss, acting like the take-charge, assertive bounty hunter he was supposed to be, stepped in front of Ventress and banged on the door.
"Open up!" he demanded.
Silence. He could sense life forms on the other side of the door. No doubt Ventress was also picking up on them.
"I said open up!"
There was no response. The seconds ticked by. Slightly nonplussed, Voss gestured to Ventress.
Open it.
The former Sith acolyte rolled her eyes, knocked an arrow, and fired it into the control panel. The panel sparked and sizzled as the door slid open.
Chapter 7.
Voss knew whom he would see and was poised to charge when Ventress, grunting, sprang forward and kicked Moragai squarely in the midsection. Caught utterly off guard, the Volpi stumbled backward but didn't run. Instead, he leapt in front of the pair of Rodians Voss had seen in his vision, a mother and child, and spread his forearms as wide as possible in an age-old gesture of defense.
"Don't hurt them!"
The baby shrieked, terrified, and the mother clutched him close. Her eyes, always large and expressive in Rodians, seemed huge to Voss as she stared at him and Ventress. He felt a twinge of remorse.
"I didn't do anything wrong!"
From what Voss remembered, embezzlement was generally considered pretty wrong in most circles. But everyone always said they didn't do anything wrong.
That's what usually comes first. Protestations of innocence.
"I don't care,"
Ventress replied. She had drawn her bow and was pointing an arrow at Moragai's broad chest. Voss had his blaster trained on the Volpi.
"The Rang Clan put a price on your head so big, I'm lucky I found you first,"
Ventress continued.
"We found you,"
Voss reminded her.
"We."
He paused, then added,
"Together."
Ventress closed her eyes briefly. Fortunately, Moragai was too distraught to try to take advantage of it.
"If it's money you want, I have plenty!"
"Bribery, I come second."
"I know," said Ventress. "But we're being paid well enough to get that money back to its rightful owner."
She hadn't put any particular emphasis on the word "we're," but Voss brightened.
"Thank you."
"I'm not the villain here!"
Moragai barreled on.
"Can't you see? I was just trying to do what's best for my family, for my child!"
Voss winced inwardly at the words. The youngling was not Moragai's biological child. The infant appeared to be pure Rodian. Yet that didn't matter. "My family. My child." Like any good mate and parent, Moragai simply wanted what was best for those he loved. They weren't living in a palace. The family was obviously barely making enough to get by. Moragai had been desperate to change that, and Voss couldn't blame him. Not everyone had been raised with care and affection in a temple, with plenty to eat and a roof over their heads. Voss was passingly familiar with the Rang Clan, and he knew that Moragai had been right. Even though the Volpi had taken money that wasn't his, he wasn't the villain.
"How touching."
Ventress's bored voice sounded even colder to Voss than usual.
"But I'm afraid I can't help you."
Quickly, before things could escalate to violence in the close quarters, Voss lowered his blaster slightly and reached out toward Moragai with his other hand.
"You're coming with us."
Moragai lashed out. Two arms came up. One knocked the blaster out of Voss's hand. A second landed a nasty punch to the Jedi's jaw. The other two arms shoved. Hard.
"Whoa!"
Voss stumbled backward, almost knocking Ventress down. She dodged artfully. Moragai glanced back at his wife, his four eyes filled with anguish. She wrapped her arms around their son.
"Run!"
she pleaded.
"Just run!"
"I love you." The words didn't need to be spoken to fill the room. Moragai did run, leaping without a second's hesitation through the bell-shaped window, shattering the glass. Voss raced to the broken window just in time to see Morgai get to his feet, shake himself, and scamper off.
You sure were right about that fourth arm,
Voss muttered, rubbing his chin.
You idiot!
Ventress's fists were clenched, and Voss braced himself for another one of her memorable punches. But she wasn't wasting time on him. She jumped down to the pavement and set off after their quarry. Morgai had commandeered a bright red shiny land speeder. The only problem was, it was facing the wrong direction. He glanced up to see Ventress racing after him on foot. Frantically jabbing at the controls and peering over his shoulder, he backed the speeder down the street. Ventress closed the gap between them. Voss emulated his hopefully soon-to-be partner, jumping down from the apartment and using the force to help him land softly. Glancing around, he spied a conveniently ownerless speeder bike with long handlebars and a low seat flanked by outrigger repulsor pods that he borrowed. He caught up to the running Ventress just as Morrigai swung the speeder around and took off. Ventress slowed and stopped, wreathed in a gray cloud of fumes. She clenched her fist and snarled in frustration.
Need a lift, partner?
Voss offered with a grin, pulling up beside her. She glared at him, sighed heavily, and hopped on. Ventress was done with Morrigai. Voss could feel it through the force, coming off her in waves. A grim, frightening determination that made him glad he was not the primary target of it. He slid the speeder bike, highly maneuverable despite its over-muscled appearance, underneath the larger vehicle, then rose right in front of it. Morgai gasped. Ventress leapt as smoothly as an air diver, her long, lean body arcing perfectly. She was a thing of beauty, as her arms struck Morgai in the chest, and she pulled, her momentum carrying both of them off the speeder, to tumble onto the pavement below. Morgai rose and turned to flee, but Voss was there, blocking his way. Whimpering, the Volpi turned to see Asajj Ventress triumphant, a glowing yellow lightsaber humming in her right hand.
Hands up, she demanded, adding, all four of them.
Like a cornered animal, even now Morrigai tried to flee. He turned and ran right into Voss's powerful punch. The force of the blow spun the Volpi around, and he fell to the ground. He started to rise, only to find himself staring at a lightsaber and a blaster both centimeters from his face.
It's over, Morrigai. We've got you.
Morrigai looked at them, anguished. He tried a final time.
Please! My family needs me! I'll give you triple what they're paying you!
I already told you, it doesn't work that way,
Ventress said. Her eyes narrowed.
And you've wasted my time making me run around this city. Triple won't even cover my fee.
Our fee, Voss reminded her. Let's go. Not to cast a shadow on this spectacular capture, but let's talk payment.
Voss lounged against the side of Ventress's banshee, peering up at her as she descended. When she'd told him the name of the vessel, he'd been amused that she had obviously heard the term banshee applied to herself and had decided to embrace the reference. Banshee, the ship, was a flat, disc-shaped pursuit craft. Its two engine nacelles were powerful, but with a snub-nosed cockpit bristling with weapons, it was not particularly aesthetically pleasing. It sported a turret-mounted triple blaster atop it, and the cockpit had two anti-personnel blasters and two heavier laser cannons. The Banshee was made for two purposes, hitting hard and getting away fast. And that was enough for her. Morgai had offered no further resistance and now sat in the hold, trussed up and broken. Ventress simply could have retracted the ramp and taken off, but instead she found herself eyeing the interloper.
I reckon it's an even split,
Voss continued. He gave her one of his winning smiles.
After all, we do make quite a team.
She slitted her eyes and scrutinized him, thinking. He was quite attractive, but many men were. He was strong and fast, but he could be stronger and faster. He was genuinely amusing, which was rare, and she suspected that he was more intelligent than her private nickname for him, Idiot, reflected. And he wasn't easily discouraged. In the field of bounty hunting, that counted for a lot. So instead of flat-out refusing again, Ventress planted her hands on her hips and asked,
"Why are you so hot to be part of a team? Need someone to pick up your slack?"
His brown eyes widened, and he placed a hand on his chest.
"Me? Are you kidding? I do the heavy lifting."
She waited.
"Well, it's a lot of work for one person," he said. "Even you have to admit that."
Ventress remained silent. His smirk, which had been perpetual until this point, slipped a little, and he looked away.
"It's just, I'm getting tired of being a loner, if that makes any sense."
Unexpectedly, memories flooded Ventress. Most of her life, she had been with someone, only to inevitably lose them in the cruelest of ways. First, her master, Kai Narek, then Mother Talzin and her sisters. Dead now, all of them. They had loved her, and they were slain.
Dooku had not loved her.
She had thought he had. Not as a woman, of course, or even as a daughter, but as an apprentice. Someone who showed promise, whom he enjoyed training and shaping. How eager she had been to learn, to serve him, to obey, and how quickly he had discarded her. She had meant something to him only when he could use her.
There was, Ventress thought bitterly, something terribly askew with a universe in which out of all her allies and mentors, Dooku was alive and the others breathed no more. The painful reverie lasted but a moment. Ventress knew her weakness.